Okay, good evening, Gerva. Welcome to the Matzah Shabbos here. It's a pleasure to be here. I lived in Washington Heights the last 10 years. Seven of them I lived with my wife and our family. And we miss it very, very much. And we are very happy, at least with the weather, where we are. But we also miss the community very much. You're very lucky to spend years here. It's a place of tremendous growth. It's a place of a lot of energy, and it's an important place to keep alive. So it's a good thing to be living here for you and for the community. So ashreichem, and I hope you're enjoying it as much as we did, at least. So I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about the concept Maisa Avos Simin Labanim. I assume most of us have heard of the term Maisa Avos Simin Labanim before. But if I wanted to pose a question, what does Maisa Avos Simin Labanim mean? I do think that we would all answer a certain way, and I want to show you in the first half of this year why that's maybe not exactly what was intended by those words. And then we'll see a problem that comes up by understanding the term that way, and we'll try to solve it during the balance of this year. Before we begin, let me ask you the understanding of one word. One word. Simen. What does simen mean? Anyone can suggest. A sign. Good. So now, simen means sign. So we already broke the ice. Now we know simen means sign. Good. Maisa avos, simen labanim. What do we interpret that as? What do we generally understand that term to mean? Good. Very literally translated. The actions of our fathers, or the stories of our fathers, either way, the things which occurred to our fathers, or really our forefathers, obviously, the Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. So that which happened to them is a simen labanim, is a sign for the descendants, for the people who come afterwards. Okay. So we generally understand it as follows. If we look through the course of Jewish history, we look through everything that happens in our lives as a nation, as a community, we'll find history repeating itself. Basically, we'll be able to look at history as it has unfolded since the Avos, and we'll be able to target certain points in history, and we'll say, oh, what happened now, there was really a simen for that already back in an ancient time. Already something happened to Avraham Avinu that it harkens back to the times of Avraham Avinu. There was a sign planted into Avraham Avinu's life that relates to our future, or Yitzchak, or Yaakov. Example, we read last week how Avraham Avinu left Eretz Yisrael because of the famine, because there was a drought. And where'd he go? He went down to Mitzrayim. He went down to Mitzrayim. So the Ramban quotes for us that Ramban has a very, very scary comment. The Ramban says something along the lines of Chet Gadol Chata Avraham Avinu. Wow. You wouldn't have written that line yourself, but you also wouldn't have been able to write the rest of the Ramban, so it's fair. He says Chet Gadol Chata Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu did a tremendous Avera. A tremendous Avera by what? By leaving Eretz Yisrael and going down to Mitzrayim. What was the Avera is a good question. What did he do wrong? He was doing a shtadlis. He was trying to avoid a famine. So maybe he should have recognized the high level of hashgacha he had. Maybe he should have realized that he was Avraham Avinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to protect him even in the time of a famine, even in the time of a drought. And he should have stayed in Eretz Yisrael. And that was his shtadlis, to keep bitachon. Okay, it's possible. I think Rav Moshe Feinstein has a... I haven't looked it up in a long time, so I don't remember exactly. But I'm pretty sure it's in Drash Moshe. Darash Moshe. The drushos that Moshe Feinstein has written up. So I think he has there a line where he says he can't believe this is true, that the Ramban would write this, and he chalks it up to somebody put it in accidentally. It's a typo. It's not supposed to be there. Some Talmud wrote it in, but it's not really Ramban's word. It's so hard to believe that he called Avraham Avinu out. Chet Gadol Chata Avraham Avinu. Very difficult line. But anyways, we see Avraham Avinu did something. Chet Gadol, a small mistake, a mistake at all, fine. But he went down to Mitzrayim. And what do we know happened in the rest of history because of that? The Jewish people went down to Mitzrayim as slaves for a significant amount of time. The Ramban, because, you know, Lishitas, that he thinks it was an Avera, he explains it was a punishment, basically, meaning Avraham Avinu was being repaid in kind, so to speak, that his children, his great-grandchildren, would go down to Mitzrayim. But that is one example of Maisa Avos Simin Labanim, because we see in the past that Avraham Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, we're able to look now and say, oh, Simin Labanim, what happened to Avraham Avinu also seems to have happened to his great-grandchildren. But already, as I said it over, you're probably starting to notice something even deeper. Maybe there's a little bit of, I don't know if I want to ruin the punchline, but a little bit of a causality that you're starting to hear the way I'm presenting it. So as we start to get that feeling, let's read, actually, for a few minutes inside. I put for you three Rambans. There are more, truthfully, there are more. But these three, I think, are the main three, and they definitely give us a chunk of knowledge. If we read the words of the Ramban, you'll see that the Ramban, who was the main person who pushed this idea of Maisa Avos Simin Labanim throughout his commentary, he really had something else in mind, something more than just what happens to the forefathers ends up being a sign for the descendants. So read with me here. Ramban and Parshas Lech Lech, source number one. Omar Lecha Klal. I'm going to tell you a principle. I'm going to tell you a rule. Tavin oso b'chol ha-parashos habaos. Understand this in the rest, in the balance of Sefer Bereishis. Sefer Bereishis is really all about this. Be'inin Avram Yitzvah Yaakov. V'hu inin gadol. It's a big deal. Okay, a big introduction here. His Giru Rabbasina B'derech Tzara. It's a very, very big concept that Chazal mentioned in a very, very shorthand manner, in a very terse manner. V'amru, they said in a medrash, kol mashe ir la'avos, simin labanim. That's the same words, just with kol mashe ir, right? Maisa avos, that which happened to the avos, or kol mashe ir la'avos, that which happened to the forefathers, simin labanim. It's a sign for the next generations. Says the Ramban, with this you can understand something very difficult. Sefer Bereishis is so strange, no? Most of the Torah is a sefer of mitzvos, halachos, sometimes guiding hashkafic principles, inyanei emuna. Most of Sefer Bereishis is really stories. Really stories. I understand some stories, they instill Yiras Shemayim, they instill emuna, but the details, idea after idea, prat after prat, the specifics of each story, such an arichas, no? It's so long. Every story could have had a sefer Torah about a quarter of the size. It would have been fine. So says the Ramban, no, you have to have the arichas. You have to have all of that spelled out in the stories. Why? V'lachain, says the Ramban here in the part that's not bold. V'lachain, ya'arichu aksuvim b'sipur ha-masaos, v'chathiras ha-be'eros, v'shara ha-mikrim. The Torah is going to talk at length about each of these stories and the details that occurred in those stories. V'yachshov ha-choshev bahem, someone who reads it is going to think, ki'ilu heim dvar miyusarim, ein b'am toilas. You're thinking, what are you all the details for? Such a long, we're wasting our breath over here. We don't need all these parshas with all the nitty gritty. The chulam ban lamed al asid, says the Ramban, no, they're very important psukim. Why are they very important psukim? Because they're teaching us about the future. Now listen. Ki chasher yavu hamikra lenavi mishloshes haavos. In the way when something happens to one of the neviim, meaning the three essential neviim, the avos, our forefathers, Yizboni mimenu hadavar hanigzar lavo lezaro, says the Ramban, when you see what happened to the avos, when you see what happened to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, you're going to be able to tell mashe nigzar lavo lezaro. Not just that we're going to look back and there was a clue, oh, that's cute. In history, it seems that it worked out that that which happened to Avram Avinu, something very similar, something very parallel happened to the Klal Yisrael. No, what does the Ramban say? A gzeira. It's nigzar. What does that mean, nigzar? It's decreed. It's determined. Meaning that which happens to Avram Avinu is bound to happen to the people who come after him. Is bound to happen to the Klal Yisrael in the future. That's what the Ramban is telling us here. And the Ramban goes into it. He says, Vida, ki kol gezeiras irin. That's a little bit of an esoteric term. But we'll understand it for now. That the decrees from on high. The decrees from on high. Vida, ki kol gezeiras irin. Kasher teitze mikoch gezeira el po el dimyon. Once that gezeira leaves the world of gezeira, of decree, and enters the world of reality, tia gezeira miskayem es al kolpanim. Now that is a very cryptic line. I'll try to break it down for you for a second. I'll give you the example the Ramban brings, and then I'll give you an example from our lives. The Ramban is saying a very important idea here about nevuah. If you read the Nevi'im, Yeshaya, Yechezkel, you know, the Nevi'im Achronim, you'll notice a lot of times some interesting stories. Sometimes, Kadosh Baruch Hu will tell a Navi a nevuah, tell him a prophecy, such and such is going to happen to the Klal Yisrael. I don't know. Klal Yisrael is going to be sunk by Bavel. They're going to be sunk. They're going to be destroyed. They're going to be brought down by some enemy. So sometimes the Kadosh Baruch Hu will tell the Nevuah, and then he'll say to the Navi, and while you're kind of processing that Nevuah, take a scroll, write it down, tie a rock to it, and throw it into the water, and watch as it sinks down. Or, you know, I think Yechezkel sometimes is told to, like, eat some parchment and roll around in the dirt. I don't know if people here know Navi better than me. I forget the details, but he has to do some seemingly crazy maisim that are sort of, they are, you know, reminiscent of the nevuah that they're receiving from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's going on there? Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling them to act out their nevuah? Such a strange thing. So Ramban explains what's happening here. This is well known. The Ramban is assuming we know it already. It's a poel dimyon. What it means is as follows. A gezeira from HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists in an upper realm. It exists in a realm that's not our world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is obviously not in a physical sense in our world. And his gezeiros are above our world. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu decrees something, it will obviously happen. But in order for that, a Navi should ensure that that nevuah translates from something up there to down here into a reality in our world, he has to do a poel dimyon. He acts it out in this world. And when he acts it out in this world, it's already occurred in some form, in some fashion in this world. the Jewish people didn't sink, but that parchment sank, and that was representative of the Jewish people. Or the whoever was supposed to roll around the dirt didn't roll around the dirt, but Yechezkel did. So that's acting out of what might happen in the future. That act, that Poel Dimyon, is what actually brings down the Nevuah into our world, concretizes it, and makes it actualized and tangible in our world in the future. Now, it's still kind of an esoteric topic, obviously, but I'll give you another example that we actually use in our lives. Rav Shechter Shlita always mentions this. By the Rosh Hashanah Seder, we have a minug. It's in Shulchan Aruch. We have a minug that we eat simanim, right? We eat simanim. We eat apples and honey. We eat, what else do we do? Carrots, leeks, I don't remember. But we do a bunch of things. And what do? When we do that, we say Yihi Ratzon about each of those things. And they're clever. They're all puns, right? Yihi Ratzon, we should have a Shana Tova Masuka. We should be Rosh Velo Lazanov. Right? We have all these things. I think they say you should have raisins and celery so you can get a raisin salary. You say a bunch of Yihi Ratzons to Daven to Hashem that this year should be full of good decrees, good gezeros. Beautiful. A tefillah. So I have a question. How many times a day do we daven? Depending on how busy we are, depending on what stage in our life, depending on male or female. Okay, we daven once, twice, three times a day. We daven many, many times in our lives, correct? So how come every time we daven, we don't act out what we're doing? So what the, really, what's the idea of acting it out at the Seder night? So Rav Shechter always quotes from the Nesivis, that who has a sefer of drushos on the Chumash, that he explained that what we're doing on Seder night is we're actually doing what the Nevi'im do. We're saying a Yihi Ratzon, that the year should be with gezeros of good. Because it's a time, Rosh Hashanah is a time we're getting gezeros for good or for bad. So we're saying to Kadosh Baruch Hu, we want good gezeros for the rest of the year. But in order to make sure that those tefillos that we're asking Kadosh Baruch Hu for are gezeros which actually get pulled down into this world, what do we have to do? We have to act it out. So, okay, we're not going to actually give ourselves a sweet year. That's not possible. But we eat a sweet apple with honey to show that we want to have a sweet year. Or we have the leeks or whatever each thing represents to show that we want that gezera to come to fruition, to come to reality in our lifetime. So that's what we're doing in the Rosh Hashanah Seder. We're trying to act out the gezera that we're requesting from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Ramban, that's what's happening in every Nevuah, in the Nevi'im Achorim, when you find that they're doing this funny acting out of the Nevuah, it's because that's a way of bringing the Nevuah down into this world. Says the Ramban, a fascinating thing. That's what Maisa Avo Sim Labanim really means. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu has gezeras for the Jewish people. And in order that those gezeros should have a place, should have a tfisa, should have a hold in our world, he had the avos act them out in their lifetime. And what the avos lived through, those events that the avos went through, those events eventually became the reality of their descendants, of the Jewish people afterwards. So their all of their lifetime, all of these events and all of the details in those events were really not just a sim and a sign, something that was a cute hint that we could look back and say, oh, it matches up, that's nice. No, it was actually them acting out what was bound to happen to the Jewish people in the future. Look in source number 2, the Ramban, in his Akdamah L'Sefer Shmos. The Ramban explains that there are two Svarim, Bereshis and Shmos, and he titles them, he names them. This is famous, Hishlam HaKasav, Sefer Bereshis. We just finished Sefer Bereshis. She was Sefer HaYetzira. Sefer Bereshis says Sefer HaYetzira. What's Sefer Shmos? Sefer HaGeula. So Sefer Bereshis, Sefer HaYetzira. What does Yetzira mean? Creation. Creation. Bereshis, creation. Sefer HaYetzira. So the Ramban says like this, Sefer HaYetzira, we understand, that makes a lot of sense. Bechidish HaOlam, V'Yetziras Kol Notzar. In Sefer Bereshis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world and everything in it. So it makes sense that Sefer Bereshis is the Sefer HaYetzira, the Sefer creation, correct? Very logical, but not really so logical, right? Because how many parshios deal with Bereshis? One. There's a lot more parshios that don't deal with creation at all. They deal with the Avos, they deal with the Shvatim, they deal with going down to Mitzrayim, but they seem to have nothing to do with creation. So why is the whole Sefer called Sefer Yetzirah? Strange, right? Maybe it should be Sefer Yetzirah ve'Avos, or Sefer Avos, because that's really the majority, the balance of the Sefer. So what's the pshat that it's Sefer Yetzirah? So the Ramban answers this question. Look in the underline. This is amazing. Uvimikrei ha'Avos, the events which happened to our forefathers, Sheheim ke'inyin Yetzirah lizaram. All of the events that happened to the Avos after Bereshis are also an act of Yetzirah, are also an act of creation. What do you mean an act of creation? It's just stories. It's just what happened to the Avos. No. Minisha kol mikreim tziyurei dvarim lirmos ulahodia kol asid lavo lahem. Every story that happened to the Avos in Sefer Bereshis is an act of creation because their lifetime, the events that occurred in their lifetime, those things that they went through, are what create the rest of history. Maisa Avos Simin Labanim means that whatever happened, whatever transpired in the lifetime of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov Avinu is going to happen now because it happened to them, to the Jewish people in the future. So that's also Yetzirah. That's also a creation because they're creating the rest of Jewish history in their lifetime. Unbelievable. That's the Ramban tells us here right in the introduction to Sefer Shmos. Source number three, you have again the Ramban saying, V'rimeze lov ki banav yerdim Mitzrayim neharav lagar sham ba'aretz. That Avram Avinu go down to Mitzrayim, and that's an allusion to the fact that the Klal Yisrael are going to end up going down to Mitzrayim. And look in the bold, lo nafal davar mikol ma'ora ha'av, shelo yihyeh bebanim. Not one detail, not one event that happened to the Avos will not then occur to the Banim. Everything is going to be repeated in history because it's a causality. It's a cause and effect. It's not just a sign. When the Avos went through something, when they did something, that resulted in it happening later in history. As it says in Bereishis Rabba, Rabbi Pinchas b'shem Rabbi Oshia Omar, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu l'Avram Seyuch Voshes Aderech Lefnei Banecha. Beautiful Lashon, the Ramban quotes from the Medrash, that Avram Avinu was told by the Ribbono Shel Olam, Seyuch Voshes Aderech, go and chart that path for the Klal Yisrael. Meaning, whatever you do now, you're just setting up a path for the rest of Jewish history to follow along on. That's what the Ramban is really saying about Maisa Avos and Labanim. Now that's beautiful, amazing, awe-inspiring. It's pretty crazy to think that whatever we experience in our lives, it sounds like every individual person's life, it sounds like all of Jewish history for the rest of history, is really based on any events that would have occurred to the forefathers so many years ago. Amazing. But what problem does that raise? Does that bother you at all? Whose fault is it that the Klal Yisrael ended up in Mitzrayim, enslaved? Whose fault is it? So if you would have asked me, well, I prepared this year, so you couldn't ask me yesterday. But if you would have asked me 15 years ago, so I would have told you the Jewish people's fault. Maybe I was a little more educated. I would tell you the Shvatim's fault for selling Yosef, and this was all an atonement for that, and going down to Mitzrayim was part of that. There was some, you know, quid pro quo. I mean, there's some schar va'onish going on. This was an onish for an avera that the Klal Yisrael committed at that point in history. What does it sound like from the Ramban? Whose fault is it that we went to Mitzrayim? Who caused us to go to Mitzrayim? Sounds like Avram Avinu. No? It sounds like that was predetermined. Avram Avinu was the one who got down to Mitzrayim the first time. Because of his Poel Dimyon, because he did that, he brought about that all of us went down to Mitzrayim. So what happened to Bechira Chafshis? What happened to our free will to determine what we do right, what we do wrong, and how that leads to the events that occur in our lives, the punishment or the reward that we should receive for doing those things? What happened in all of Jewish history to that, and what happened in our individual lives to that Bechira, to that free will, that ability to make decisions that impact our destiny? It sounds like everything is already destined to happen based on the Avos. That's what Ramban says. Every single detail that happened to the Avos is going to happen to us. So what control do we have? How do we have the ability to affect our lives? How do we have the ability to make decisions that impact what happens to us in the future? So it's a very difficult question. It's a very, very difficult question. It's very troubling. So I want to share with you just for the rest of the time, if you flip the page, it's so beautiful. I typed this myself, so there might be typos, but other than the typos, the Rav Soloveitchik has an essay in Abraham's Journey, which is one of the books. You have to know a lot of different books from the Rav, the reliable ones. So the Rav didn't himself write so much in his lifetime. The Brisker Derech, basically in general, wasn't to write so much in the lifetime. The Rav wrote an essay called Isha Halacha, which is transformative and mind-blowing and amazing, and Uvikashta Misham, which goes along with it, its companion essay, both incredibly beautiful, amazing, difficult books to read, but excellent. He has a few other essays that he's written as well. But in terms of Svarim, by way of Svarim, not so many Svarim they published in his lifetime. A lot of Torah Rav Shechter has given us, Rav Torsky has given us, all of his students have given us. But in terms of his own writing, not so much. You have a bunch of these sets. You've probably seen them. You probably have them in your houses, some of you. The Me'otzar HaRav series. Does that sound familiar? English books. Abraham's Journey. Family Redeemed. I'm trying to remember what else there is. Out of the Whirlwind, Festivals of Freedom for Pesach, right? All these different types of books. So those are made up of English essays, which are very accessible, very readable, and very amazing, kedarko. But it's also important to know that even though they seem like they're kind of secondhand, they're really, Rav Tversky told me, they're primary sources. They're primary sources. Because what happened was the Rav, he actually writes about this in Abraham's Journey somewhere. Every time he would give a shir, he would try to write the note. This is amazing, because he was the biggest genius that existed. You know, pretty much the biggest genius that existed since his grandfather. So you would think that he could just say shiurim and not have notes and it would be easy. He said that every time he gave a shiur, he would write down a transcript before and he would write notes. We know this to be true, that he would write notes before, and then he says that he would notice a difference. If he wrote notes beforehand and he used the notes when he was giving the shiur was one level. If he didn't write notes before because he wasn't prepared, the shiur was never at the same level. So he used to write, and he felt that a person only understands once they process, once they teach. And writing is a form of processing and getting the ideas out of your body and onto paper. So if he wrote his ideas down, it was more clear to him. It was more of a darvash shalim for him. So that was helpful. So anyway, so when he taught classes in Revel or when he gave other shiur and various shiur in the area, so he would write notes. So a lot of these books, including Abraham's Journey, are actually people worked on those manuscripts. People worked on his notes. Now, he wrote notes for himself, so it wasn't perfectly written in the form of an essay. So there had to be some editing and some syntax edited and things like that. But it's basically straight from his pen to our eyes. So these types of books are a very, very helpful insight into the Rav's thought. And they're very, very useful, and they're very, very meaningful, and very reliable. So in Abraham's Journey, which is a tremendous, amazing work, he has a beautiful essay in which he discusses this topic in particular. And in that context, he asks our question. He says, according to Ramban, who drills home this message that Maisa Avo Simon Labanim really means that everything is basically destined to happen, that already occurred to the Avos, he says it's a very, very big problem. Where does it leave anywhere for us to shape our own destiny, as he says? So he answers by explaining with an amazing concept, a really amazing concept, which I think will change the way we look at Chumash, change the way we look at the Sefer Bereishis in general, and I think it could have a strong impact on our lives as well. But first, maybe a little bit of background. The Gemara in Erevin says, Erevin Yagimel says, that sometimes you have a machlekes in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, between different Tanayim, different Amoraim. They argue about halacha. The halacha is mutter, the halacha is asr. The halacha is you should do, you shouldn't do. Everything's a dispute in the Gemara. Everything's a dispute. So we have halacha, which paskins, which decides, like one of those opinions. If a machleg is between one rabbi and a second rabbi, we paskin like the second rabbi. The first rabbi, we don't paskin like him. So what happens to that opinion? That opinion disappears. It's meaningless. It's wrong. It's puzzle. We don't look at it anymore. So the Gemara says, chas v'shalom, elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim. What does that mean, elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim? It means you have two opinions that go head to head. They're at a conflict. We choose one of them, but we don't say the other one is trash, chas v'shalom. We don't throw it out. We say, elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim. Both of them have a level of emes, a level of meaning, a level of truth to them, and they're both divrei lekim chayim. They're both the word of God. They're both spiritually meaningful, and they're both religiously important. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. Does that have any nafkamina? Like, do we care? So is it just like a nice schmooze to make that guy feel better that he didn't get passing like his time? Or is there something really relevant that comes out of that? So the Mishnah Maseches Edios tells us that something relevant does come out of it. The Mishnah says that we have Mishnayos across Shas where there are two opinions. One is a majority and one is a minority. Rebbe Ploni says Mutter and the Chachamim say Aser. So who do we pass like when it's a majority against a minority? We pass like the majority, halacha karabim, right? We don't pass like a yachid, a single das yachid in front of so many other opinions. The majority wins out, good. So the Mishnah Ezi says, well, why does the Mishnah list the minority opinion then? Isn't that a waste of space? Meaning the Mishnah was supposed to be, this you have to understand, the Mishnah was supposed to be a kitzer shulchan aruch. It was supposed to be a sefer of psak halacha. It was supposed to be a shmiras Shabbos kilchasa for Mesechus Shabbos. It was supposed to be a shmiras Hilchos Brachos Kilchasa, you know, for Mesechus Brachos, etc. It was supposed to be halacha. So if you're reading halacha sefer, you don't care about the people who are wrong. You want the opinions of the people who we paskin like. So why put in the das yachid? Why would you put in the minority opinion? So the Mishnah says, because in a shas of the chak, when a person is up against the wall, when the rabbi decides that it's a pressing situation, you need to know all the opinions. Why? Because usually, lichatchil, we paskin like the majority opinion. But in a very, very pressing circumstance, in a shas of the chak, it's kiddieved dami. It's a pressing circumstance that we have to make a decision with our backs against the wall. Sometimes we'll rely on a minority opinion. Sometimes we'll rely on an opinion that isn't really the halacha l'maisa. Sometimes we'll need to fall back on that Rebbe Ploni who argued on the Chachamim. So the Mishnah has to list for us not only the halachically accepted opinion of the majority, but also the minority opinion, because sometimes we're going to fall back on that. Where does that come from? I thought he was thrown out. I thought he was rejected. The answer is it comes from Elu ve'elu Devar Lekim Chayim. The minority opinion isn't paskin-like in normal situations, but it is true. It is emes. It is Torah Hashem. And therefore, it still remains, it still exists in our world, even in our halachic world. And because of that, a person, when they're stuck, and the Rav allows them to, or needs them to, or says they should, they will fall back on that minority opinion because it wasn't thrown out. It still exists. Elu ve'elu, divrilim kim chayim. There exist multiple levels of emes within the Torah. It's not emes in a lechatchila sense. We paskin like one opinion. But it is emes in the broader sense, and it can be relied on in the future. The opposite is true as well, by the way. Rav Shechter always quotes from the Mishkan Siyankiv that where does it come from, this whole idea of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik felt this way as well? Where does it come from, this whole idea of chumras? Meaning the Rush and the Rambam have a machlekes about something in Hilchos Shabbos. The Rush is Mekel, and two other opinions are Mekel, so the Shulchan Aruch paskins lakula. He paskins leniently. Okay. And then someone comes along and says, yeah, but I want to be machmir for the Rambam. Why be machmir for the Rambam? We paskin like the Rush. What are you talking about? So, first of all, why do you want to do it? And second of all, what meaning does it have? It's not the halacha. We threw that opinion out. So, to answer both questions, the Mishkan Yaakov says, no, elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim. The Rambam had an opinion. We don't accept it as the mainstream opinion amongst the poskim. Okay, so we paskin that you're allowed to do such and such in Shabbos. But his opinion is still Torah. His opinion is still emes. And if a person says, I want to be stringent on myself, I want to be machmir for that minority opinion that we don't paskin like, it's meaningful. It's elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim. So the kula comes from elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim. When you're stuck in a pressing situation, the fact that minority opinion still exists is based on elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim. And in a case of chumras also, even when we don't pass like his opinion, it's meaningful to be machmir sometimes when it's the right thing to do for a person. It's meaningful to be machmir on a certain opinion because that opinion does still exist in the realm of halacha, in the realm of divrei lekim chayim. Yeah, there are other discussions about elu ve'elu. Does elu ve'elu apply to metzias? That's a big question. Meaning, this is a Rashi and Maseches Kesubos on Daf Nun Zayin deals with this, but we won't talk about his particular example. Another example, Rabbeinu Tam had a famous opinion that, we'd be here by now, but we would have ended Shabbos a lot later if we held like Rabbeinu Tam. Maybe some of you do. Rabbeinu Tam's opinion was that Shabbos, that the Tzeis HaKachav doesn't come until much later in the night. How many minutes into the night is a question in and of itself within Rabbeinu Tam. Is it 72 flat? Is it the Achtel, the Zextel? There's different ways of calculating it, but it's something much longer than what we generally assume, something in the range. Every shul is slightly different, but 45 minutes or so after the Shkia. So Rabbeinu Tam had a much longer Bein HaShemashos. Okay. The Vilna Gaon came along and he said, Rabbeinu Tam is wrong. This is what we often assume like. Rabbeinu Tam is wrong. Really, he said, HaChush Makchish. Those are the words he uses. Meaning, a person goes outside and observes the night sky and they realize HaChush Makchish. Their experience, their observation, undoes Rabbeinu Tam's argument. Meaning, go outside, 45 minutes after Shkia, says the Vilna Gaon, and you look at the sky, and you'll see, it is very dark already. The stars are out already. It is already nighttime, it's already Tzitzit HaKachav. So the Vilna Gaon argues that Rabbeinu Tam is wrong. Rabbeinu Tam is wrong in what? In learning? That's not what the Vilna Gaon says. He says he's wrong in Metzias, in observation, in reality. He's saying if you look at the reality, the scientific reality, the observable reality in the world, Rabbeinu Tam just didn't get it right. So now, I have a question to pose to you. Is there room to be machmir or mekel for Rabbeinu Tam? So we don't paskin like him. Let's assume we don't paskin like him. Let's assume we're mekel like the Vilna Gaon, and we don't assume that. Not everyone is. Some people are machmir, but let's assume we're not machmir for him. Is there any room to have a chumra like Rabbeinu Tam? On the one hand, it's two opinions, both legitimate opinions in Balei Masora, elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim. But on the other hand, the Rav Shechter makes this argument in one of his farim. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Tam and the Vilna Gaon, are they having an argument about halacha? Not really. They're having an argument about metzias, about reality. Do you have elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim on reality? Or maybe one of them just made a mistake. Very hard to say the words. It's almost as hard as what we talked about before, the Aaron Vinu sinning. But maybe one of them made a mistake. There are ways around this, but there are other examples that are similar to this. For example, we know there were kelim in the Mishkan. So there are machlekes, there are disputes about how big, what the measurements were for those kelim, for those utensils that were used in the Mishkan. So let's say one person says it was 5 amas and one person says it was 6 amas. So whether or not we find it archaeologically and prove it, either way, is it possible that they're both right? It's not possible. It's a question of history. It's a question of trying to figure out what was true. Not is this mutter, is this usser, is this right, is this wrong? What happened? This happened or it didn't happen? There's no two ways to interpret that story. So that's a big, big question. Rav Huttner has a letter about this where he tries to answer it up. I never understood the letter, so I can't really say it over. But he does have a letter where he tries to explain Elu ve'elu can apply to that machlokas as well. But basically, that's a question whether you could really say Elu ve'elu. These and these are both the words of the living God. Can you say that about Metzias, about something that's a reality, about whether the sky is dark or isn't dark? That's a question. But generally, in halacha, we do have this concept of Elu ve'elu divrei lekim chayim. Says the Rav like this. Unbelievable. Do you remember why we're here? Remember what we're talking about? Mais avos in labanim. How does that work? The causality effect that when an avos, something happened to them, it's bound to happen to us. How does that work with free will? Says the Rav. Unbelievable. He says, the same way you have elu ve'elu divrei lekem chayim by halacha, you also have elu ve'elu divrei lekem chayim by gzeira v'kadosh baruch hu. What does that mean? Following example. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram Avinu, take your son Yitzchak and shecht him on a mountain. Sacrifice, I should say. Sacrifice Yitzchak Avinu to me. Akedas Yitzchak. What happens? Avram Avinu unbelievably, bravely, courageously follows that call. He heeds the advice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He listens to his word. He takes him to Har Moriah. He brings him up and he's about to shecht him, and Amalek or Hashem comes out and says, don't do it, don't do it. So it's kind of strange, no? Didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu make a gzera that he was going to sacrifice his son? You have to sacrifice his son. So I understand he repealed it at some point, but what happened to that initial gzera? Avraham Avinu didn't fulfill the gzera? It didn't come to fruition? What HaKadosh Baruch Hu said was supposed to happen didn't happen? That seems strange. So says the Rav, it did happen. Akedas Yitzchak did happen. You know why? Because there's two types of sacrifice that exist in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avraham Avinu, I need you to give your son up to me. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls us and says he needs to remind us what's his and what's ours. And the answer to the latter is nothing is ours and everything is his. But sometimes he wants to remind us. So he says to Avraham Avinu, I need you to give your son, your only precious, most beloved son that you have, I need you to take him and give him back to me. Avraham Avinu understood that to mean shechita, to mean that he has to kill his son, slit his throat. And that is one way to be Mekayim, that Gezerah. He can give his son, the life of his son, back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in that moment, Avraham Avinu thinks to himself, okay, I'm going to listen. And he gets to the emotional place where as a father who loves his child more than anything in the world, he's able to say, even so, I'm going to give him back. He's not mine. And in that sense, already, he just completely disconnected himself from Yitzchak. He gave him up. He gave him back to Ribbono Shel Olam. He realized who he really belonged to. He gets to the mountain and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, stop, don't really shecht him. What do you mean? You told me to shecht him. No, I didn't. I told you have to be moser your son to me. I told you have to realize that your son is mine. You have to make that ultimate sacrifice. You already did that. You already got yourself to a place where Yitzchak was no longer yours, where you realized Yitzchak was mine, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is Akedas Yitzchak. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, sacrifice your son. We might have interpreted that to mean, and Avram even interpreted that to mean, shecht him on a mountain. But what did it really mean? Give him back to me. How are you Mekayim that? Two possibilities. One, shecht him on a mountain. The other, get yourself into an emotional state where you could possibly fathom doing such a horrific act. That is already a sacrifice of Yitzchak, your son. The Rav explains, that's what Elu ve'Elu is by Gzera. You hear? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a Gzera. It had to be that Avraham Avinu would give up his son. That was non-negotiable. But there were multiple ways, multiple truths, multiple possibilities in order to interpret that gezeira. It could be shechita on a mountain, or it could be getting himself into that state of mind where he realized Yitzchak is no longer mine. Avram was mekayim the gezeira on the second level. That was one legitimate interpretation of go ahead, v'ha'aleu la'ola, go ahead and sacrifice your son Yitzchak to me. That was one legitimate interpretation. That was one possibility. There are multiple levels of truth to that statement. And the Rav explains that's true about every gezeira HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes. He makes a gzera that's a sweeping, widespread gzera. Klal Yisrael have to go to Mitzrayim. How we go to Mitzrayim, why we go to Mitzrayim, that's up to our determination. There are multiple paths of determining what that will mean. There is some greater destiny, but there are many, many ways to interpret that destiny. Maisa Avos Simin Labanim certainly does mean that what the Avos did brought into this world certain gzeras that are unavoidable now. It's impossible for us not to go to Mitzrayim, but we hold the key to interpreting how we're going to go down. Will it be in chains? Will it be with our heads held high? Will it be for this amount of years or that amount of years? Those types of things can be up to our decision-making. The Rav explains that the Gezeira comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is predetermined and is brought into this world, of course, by the Avos Maisa Avos Simin Labanim. And that means a causality. It means something is going to happen in your future. But there is still a nature of Simin to that simen. It still is a sign in the sense that signs can be interpreted in multiple ways. They mean something, that's for sure. We can't avoid that. It's not that we're going to get around the whole thing entirely. But what exactly they mean, what the nuance of that decree will end up being, that's up to us for our determination. Elu ve'elu, divrei lekem chayim. There are multiple paths to interpreting what the gezeira will ultimately mean in Jewish history. So yes, Everything is predetermined by the Maisa Avosim Labanim. But everything is predetermined with a lot of wiggle room to figure out what exactly that will mean to us as a nation and to us as individuals. And I think it's so important to stress that idea, both the first half and the second half, so that when we're reading Parshas Bereishis and the rest of Sefer Bereishis, we start to think about the Avos, and we start to think about their life, and we start to think about what this means in my life, how this could be a Maisa Avosim Labanim. But then we start to think how we can take those Maisa Avos and shift them in a certain direction. How can we not control our lives, but calibrate our lives, direct our lives, orient ourselves towards Kedusha in such a way that even as we see those gezeiros coming true, we start to witness them coming true in a way that we never imagined was possible, because that also is a level of interpretation of that gezeira. That also is a path which we can chart within the design path that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us through His decrees. That's what the Rav is telling us happened to Avram Avinu. That's what the Rav is telling us happened to everything in Jewish history post the Avos. It was a Maisa Avos, Simin Labanim, in the sense that it caused it, but it was also a Simin Labanim in the sense that it's in our hands to determine how exactly that causality will be manifest. So we should take time over the course of the few parshas that are left, maybe we could do some review of the previous parshas as well, to learn with this lens, with this idea in mind, to look at the Maisa Avos as a Simin Labanim, both in the sense of being strictly stuck with what happened to the Avos, but also in the sense that we do have the reins, we do have the ability to try to divert that in the path for good for all of us. Thank you so much for joining me. Good vach, and it was a pleasure sharing Torah with you.